This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. January was Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and as part of this weekend's Super Bowl in Minneapolis, the NFL and the Mayo Clinic are using one of the world's largest spectacles to raise awareness of human trafficking. The formation of the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery in the La Crosse area by the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration some 5 years ago has helped keep a focus locally on what is a major worldwide issue. Our guests today have all played a role in having a positive impact on helping the victims of human trafficking. They include Sister Marlene Weisenbeck, the convener of the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery, State Representative Jill Billings of La Crosse, who has been active proposing new laws in the Wisconsin legislature, and Philip Nielsen, a social worker at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. In this conversation with Newsmakers senior producer John Davis, Sister Weisenbeck began with an overview of just what human trafficking is.
Well, first of all, I would like to say that it's a criminal activity in which individuals are induced or mobilized in some way, harbored, transported against their will through some sense of force, fraud, or coercion for the purpose of commercial sex or labor services. So the three important things to remember in the definition of human trafficking to make it qualify as a trafficking situation is force, fraud, or coercion.
What are some of the common forms of human trafficking, or the ones that people would be familiar with?
The most common ones that we hear about are sex trafficking and labor trafficking. Sex trafficking for the purpose of exploiting a person, holding them in control, taking away their freedom, for the purpose of selling human beings for sex. Labor trafficking is a little different in that people are held in bondage to perform labor services, perhaps in manufacturing or agriculture or construction, and their payment is withheld from them, and sometimes they are forced to work under very strenuous and situations in which they work long, long hours and their rights as human workers are not respected. There are many other kinds of trafficking. It could be related also to selling human organs, selling and buying human organs, child brides, those kinds of things, which probably aren't as prevalent in the United States, but they are so in other parts of the world.
And it's really a major worldwide issue, is it not?
It's absolutely a worldwide issue. And whatever happens in one part of the world affects us wherever we are in our own part of the world. There are over 500 trafficking flows around the world. We would say that most of them come maybe from the Near East, countries like India, China, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Uzbekistan. But every year, there could be as many as 600,000 to 800,000 people that are trafficked around the world, and the United States will probably receive 15 to 18,000 of those trafficked persons as they make their way through the traffic flows around the world.
Define what a flow means.
That means the traffic route where human beings are bought and sold, and where connections are made from one point in the world to another point in the world, to those who buy people and then sell them to others for profit. In the world today, we know that the profits from human trafficking are over $150 billion per year, and human trafficking is at least the second largest criminal activity in the world, if not the third, along with gun trafficking and drug trafficking.
And it's certainly a major part of kind of an underground economy that we have in the world.
It's an absolutely underground economy. It's a secret economy. And in that economy, there are all kinds of actors, people who are standing around watching for persons who are vulnerable, people who will pick up those individuals and see that they're transferred from one place to another, people who are groomers for those who are trafficked, who teach them what is necessary for them to be acceptable to their buyers, all the way up the line to the individual that's called the bottom, or the individual that is closest to the buyer or the seller and makes recommendations. And he or she herself, himself or herself, are part of the closest part of the trafficking ring.
The issue in the state of Wisconsin, and in particular this region, is it much bigger than is reported?
There's an awful lot that we don't know, but those who are doing research on the topic and who are keeping the data are noticing that the state of Wisconsin is probably in the middle of the 50 states for the incidences of human trafficking. We would be around the 21st or the 23rd highest state in the union for human trafficking. And how does this happen in the United States? Well, the traffic flows or routes actually follow the interstate highway system. Here in La Crosse, we're so close to it. And so we're very sure that there's a lot of trafficking that comes in and out of the city. We might not know about all of it because it could be in the process of investigation or prosecution or definition, whatever that is. But in a small kind of unofficial survey that the task force here in La Crosse did a couple of years ago, we learned from 18 agencies, human service agencies, schools, law enforcement, et cetera, that they were very sure that they've met victims of human trafficking. Mm-hmm. And we've seen more and more arrested and reported in the local news media.
How did you come to begin the task force to end modern slavery?
It was rather improvisational and spontaneous, but I guess at the root of it all was the fact that I had been invited by the White House to be a member of a faith-based and Neighborhood Partnerships Advisory Council during the presidency of Barack Obama. And when the advisory council was formed and we met each other in Washington, we were asked to study the topic of modern slavery. And from that experience of the training and the in-service that I received there, knowing what the federal government is doing, having met a number of victims there, survivors, I should say, one comes home with a feeling of moral outrage and a whole new body of knowledge that I had never recognized before in my life. So it was when my community, the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, had its General Assembly in 2013, we were asked what kinds of things we should be talking about. Important areas for mission. And I said, does anybody want to talk about modern slavery? And that's the seed of the formation of the task force here in La Crosse.
You've been doing work for about 5 years. What is the work you're doing?
Our primary mission is to raise awareness. There are a lot of aspects to fighting against human trafficking, all the way from training to media and public relations, and we thank you for this opportunity, to helping victims in a direct way toward legislation, which Representative Billings will be talking about. And we want to provide safe housing for victims. Our primary mission has been focused on raising awareness, talking to as many faith-based and community organizations that will listen to us. And also, we've done some trainings and have contributed to some networking with other organizations in the local area that help raise this awareness and get the word out.
What do you consider the task force's major accomplishments to be so far?
I think our major accomplishments in the last 5 years is the fact that we've actually developed a level of awareness that is now noticeable in La Crosse and in the area around the Coulee region. When we first started 5 years ago, most people didn't want to talk about it. They hadn't heard about it, and they said, of course, La Crosse, we're just a small city, and it certainly doesn't happen here, so it's not necessary to talk about it. But as we've been able to get more information out about it and to talk to a lot of people, they recognize the signs as we talk about them. It was hard, for example, in the first or second year of our existence to get the attention of the media because they didn't think it was something that existed either. Now the media is coming to us and asking for more information and to be involved, and that's a very, very good thing. We've developed a lot of relationships within the community on through all those professional levels that give us a place to go when we have a vulnerable person or a victim who is seeking some kind of help. So maybe you could say we're just out there rattling the cage and we're trying to get people's attention and to give them good information about human trafficking and how they might watch for it in their own neighborhoods.
January is Human Task Force Awareness Month. I know the Franciscan Sisters put out a series of interviews or a series of videos on the internet that speak to the problem of human trafficking. Could you talk a little bit about that series, please?
Yes. In collaboration with Breaking Free from Minneapolis, that is a safe house and an organization which serves a lot of victims of human trafficking, we were able to identify 5 survivors of human trafficking and a pimp and a John. And we interviewed them about what the reality of their life is about and created videos of these interviews, which are now posted on our website, which is www.fspa.org/modernslavery. These interviews, anyone can go there and gain access to them and learn about as close as we can get to the survivors about how they were brought into the life, what it was like, and where they are now in their recovery process. We know, working in the field of human trafficking, that it's not always possible for victims to come forward publicly and to identify themselves because of the possible consequences from their perpetrators. But we did get the permission, the written permission of all of these people that we interviewed, and we've been able to make this little video series, which is called The Faces of Human Trafficking.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Davis. Today we're talking about what's being done in the La Crosse area to make a positive impact on the issue of human trafficking. Our guests include Sister Marlene Weisenbeck, the convener of the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery, State Representative Jill Billings of La Crosse, who has been active in the Wisconsin legislature on the issue of human trafficking, and Philip Nielsen, a social worker at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse, who has worked on the issue in a number of areas, including training medical professionals in how to deal with the issue when it comes before them. State Representative Billings, you've been dealing with this for a lot of your time in the legislature. Why has it been an issue that you want to see some progress on?
Several years ago, I was invited to attend a conference in La Crosse on human trafficking. It was funded through the Community Foundation, the June Chomey Social Justice Fund. And I attended and learned a lot. And at that conference, a constituent, someone that I represent, said, "Can't you help do something about this?" And so I started my work on human trafficking issues.
How was it first received in the legislature? Did you have somebody you could work on this with?
My staff did a lot of research for me, and I found partners on both sides of the aisle, which is, I think, always important if you want to get some legislation through. So I originally started with Senator LaTanya Johnson from Milwaukee area. She was doing some work on human trafficking also, and we started working on some issues together. She has done some really good work with human trafficking, and human trafficking exists in Milwaukee as it does in almost every county in Wisconsin. So she was a great ally. I found Senator Harsdorf, who was a Republican ally on some of my legislation, and Senator Darling is also helping out on some legislation that I'm currently trying to get through the assembly. My first piece of legislation that really saw success was a piece of legislation that would, when we find kids that are human trafficked, we bring them in through social services and make sure that they get the services that they need. Kids who have been trafficked often have health needs because of the life that they have led and the situations they've been forced or coerced into. They have mental health needs. Most kids were actually previously sexually assaulted. So there are a lot of issues that those kids are dealing with. And I think it's important for us to help those kids, those victims, find success in life and get back on the right track. And so this legislation passed through the Assembly and the Senate and was signed into law. But I have another piece of legislation that I've worked on for a few sessions now that I'm still working on, and that would say that you cannot arrest a child for prostitution. Children in Wisconsin actually cannot legally have sex. They cannot legally agree to sex. So why are we arresting kids who are forced or coerced into prostitution? So this bill says that now that we have a system set up for taking kids in, getting them services, getting them back on the right track, there's no reason to arrest them and bring them into jail. And many law enforcement people, especially in our area, people I've talked to have said, we don't need to arrest kids to keep them safe. The Attorney General has said when you arrest kids, it sets up a situation where it's you're fighting against them. They're less likely to cooperate, to turn over the people who are trafficking them. So I think it's important just to get that bill, that law off the books like so many other states have done.
Why is there resistance in Wisconsin to that?
Well, I don't fully understand that, quite honestly, but as I am talking with legislators who have concerns about it, there are some, I've heard the comment that there are some law enforcement in different parts of the state who still want that tool in their toolbox. I think that's a pretty crummy tool, and I don't think that law enforcement needs that tool. I've heard from a lot of law enforcement that they don't. There are other ways that we can bring kids in and keep them safe and get them services. And there are some other arguments that people have brought up, but overwhelmingly we have advocates throughout the state who are in support of this bill. The faith community has come out in a huge way, in a really wonderful way, testifying on this bill in the Capitol in a way that is really wonderful. Groups that advocate for victims of human trafficking have done really great testimony, given great testimony on this bill from all over the state. So it has passed through the committee in the assembly. In fact, the chair of the committee, when he heard all the details on the bill, said, "I'd like to sign on to that bill." So we knew it was going to be good, and we got a vote, a unanimous vote, to get it out of committee. Now we're working on getting it through the Senate, and thanks to many advocates in this area and other parts of the state, we have a hearing in the Senate on Tuesday, and I'm hoping that we'll get a vote and be able to see success. But if it doesn't make it through this time, because we're running close on time, I'm going to bring it back next session. I will never, never, never give up on this bill. There are several initiatives actually in front of the Assembly right now in the Senate. One is a truck driver education on human trafficking that says that tech colleges and licensed private commercial driver courses should provide instruction to people who want to be truck drivers on recognizing and preventing human trafficking. There is a nationwide group called Truckers Against Trafficking. That is a great group that a lot of trafficking happens at truck stops as kids are taken from state to state. Mm-hmm. And an Escalade might pull up at a truck stop with tinted windows, the doors open, and kids that are not dressed appropriately for the weather are forced to go out and knock on doors. And there are truck drivers who, some who used to just let that activity go on and didn't want to get involved, recognize that they need to get involved. They need to report when something happens. Now that people have cell phones, it's easy to write down a license plate number, call the state troopers, tell them something is happening at truck stops. There's some effort to really make people who are buying more accountable and raise the punishments on some of that. There's a bill that's fashioned after a bill that I introduced last session. Someone else has introduced it in a slightly different way, and it includes a surcharge of $5,000 on individuals who are convicted of patronizing or soliciting a prostitute, or as I call it, buying sex. So this is an enhancer, an extra surcharge that will be collected, and the money will go to treatment and services for victims of sex trafficking and also internet crimes against children investigations. This has also passed the Assembly and the Senate, and it's in joint finance. And finally, there is a piece of legislation that increases the penalty for purchasing sex, and that will increase the penalty of repeat patronization to a felony. And so there are people in the legislature who are looking at this issue and are, through various means, are trying to do something about it. The governor's conference on tourism will be coming up in March, and I'm working with some of the people in the Department of Tourism to have one of the speakers at the conference talk about signs that people can look for who work at hotels, how they know that human trafficking, signs that tell them that human trafficking may be going on in their places of business. The conference on tourism has 1,000 people from throughout the state attend, so it's a great place to get in touch with people who have resorts up north, or rent out cabins, or hoteliers, to help educate them on this issue, and also their staff. There's someone who talked about working in a hotel and saying he felt like there was a young boy there that was looking at him in a way that felt like he needed help, but the staff person didn't know what to do because they had no training, and they just, hotels are supposed to be welcoming and accepting and cater to their people who are there. So that face has haunted him ever since. And so this helps people who work at hotels recognize signs and tells them what they should do.
So are laws against perpetrators, both those who are making money and controlling individuals and those who are buying the services, are those strict enough in Wisconsin?
Well, we know that Wisconsin has been a hub of human trafficking. And we know that, so it certainly exists here, And I believe in the past that we haven't paid enough attention to what was happening. I think that laws, you know, you can approach this issue from a lot of different ways. I think one of the best things that we have done as a state is hire somebody who has looked at the data and is an expert on this area, who is the head of our anti-human trafficking task force, and brought together people from all over the state, from law enforcement, from the Attorney General's office, from the Children and Family Department, people like Sister Marlene, people like Judge Gonzalez, advocates, people who are victims, and had them sit down together and look at the situation of human trafficking in Wisconsin in a very smart, data-based, best practices way of looking at things and going forth with recommendations and ideas on what we should be doing next. I think that's the best thing that we've done in our state.
Philip, how did you come to get involved in this issue?
Mayo Clinic Health Systems has sponsored with community partners a child maltreatment conference for decades. And as part of that, the awareness of minors being sex trafficked is child abuse. And our conference last year collaborated with Sister Marlene and the task force, and we brought in speakers for a full day focus on human trafficking. I think, you know, one of the things that I see is that whole piece of awareness. We live in a very middle-class community, and we want to believe the best of everybody. And I think, you know, having that awareness that as healthcare providers, we probably see human traffic victims that we don't recognize. And I'd like to just cite some statistics because, for me, it kind of points out in the healthcare arena what our responsibilities and what the opportunities are. So there was a 2014 study published in the Annals of Healthcare that found 88% of sex traffic survivors reported some kind of contact in healthcare while being exploited. Another one indicated that over half of the labor and sex trafficked victims surveyed had accessed healthcare at least once while being exploited. And 97% of those surveyed indicated they had never been given any information or support while in healthcare. I think it underscores the whole issue of, and healthcare providers want to help. I mean, that's what we're trained to do. And I have the utmost respect for my colleagues across the institutions as well as the nation. But I think it underscores the whole issue of, as healthcare providers, we're not always aware, we're not always prepared, and we can't always figure out how or what's the best way to respond.
My understanding of you is that part of what you do is help your colleagues recognize potential victims and help them with that. Yeah. How do you go about doing that?
That effort is just really starting, I think, with that awareness. There's some things going across in healthcare across the nation that are very well developed as far as education, tools, awareness, connections or relationships with law enforcement and victim advocacy and the different groups that can be brought into play if a victim decides that they want help. And not all victims want help, not necessarily because they don't want help, but because often their perception of getting help means something very negative to them. In Rochester, in the ER, they have an algorithm in which they ask a series of questions, and depending on those questions, we hope to be able to adapt that in our health systems across the region. Begin to educate our healthcare providers what to ask, how to ask it in a way that recognizes that their patient may be traumatized. And as we talk about people who are traumatized, we're not always going to get the reaction that we expect from a traumatized victim. And so we have to be aware of what is best practice for providing trauma-focused care.
Is Mayo on the cutting edge of this, or are other parts of the country doing a better job?
From my research, I think there are some large healthcare institutions in California and Arizona and other places that have really recognized the extent of human trafficking, have developed a cohesive program, and can serve as a model for Mayo and our health system to implement and adapt to our communities.
I did want to touch on Mayo's campaign with the NFL for the upcoming Super Bowl. The NFL is very good at marketing. I don't know if they always pick issues like human trafficking to be involved in or not, but they've allowed Mayo to raise this issue as part of the nationwide Super Bowl celebration, yeah. Correct?
What a world stage or a national stage, and I'm proud of Mayo for deciding to take that issue and begin that awareness campaign, because I think sometimes if we try and do too much too soon, we turn people off. So one of the Mayo efforts is to raise awareness that people contribute in a small way by donating items and things that survivors of human trafficking might need. And just that awareness begins kind of that trickle in the stream, if you will, that becomes a waterfall. And so, yes, I'm very proud of Mayo for having that as an issue, deciding to use that, to use their recognition as the premier healthcare institution, and saying, this is important to Mayo, and we're going to address it.
Philip Nielsen is a social worker from Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. Also on the panel today, State Representative Jill Billings. She represents the 95th Assembly District here in the La Crosse area. And Sister Marlene Weisenbeck. She's the convener of the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery. They're talking with WPR's John Davis about regional and state efforts to raise awareness about the issue of human trafficking. The conversation continues here in just a moment on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. Today we're talking about efforts to combat human trafficking on the heels of Human Trafficking Awareness Month in January, and this weekend's work by the Mayo Clinic and the National Football League, who together are raising awareness of the issue in conjunction with this weekend's Super Bowl in Minneapolis. Our guests are Wisconsin State Representative Jill Billings of La Crosse, Mayo Clinic Health System Social Worker Philip Nielsen, and convener of the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery, Sister Marlene Weisenbeck, who shares with moderator John Davis why human trafficking is such a challenging issue to tackle.
There is so much secrecy around it. There are so many threats by the traffickers to the trafficked that if you're in a position like that, you're not going to talk, for one thing. And if you're not going to talk, you won't appear in public. You know what the consequences will be if you displease your perpetrator. And sometimes the lure of the money itself can become attractive to the trafficked person, and it becomes almost like an addiction that grips them and holds them in control of what's happening. Some of the victims also don't realize that this is not normal behavior, or it's not the way normal, average life should be lived. And so they are taking into their minds a whole different sense of what it means to be normal. And so if this seems to be what life is like, they're going to continue in it without knowing how to make good judgments and without the assistance of providers in human services and health care, et cetera, school officials that can recognize this. So they won't come forward.
Jill, from your view, dealing with it legislatively, why has it been such a difficult issue to get at?
I think that Sister Marlene did a nice job talking about people who are trafficked and their mindset. But with the general public, I think a lot of people, you know, are just going along living their lives. And it's something that they don't know to look for. If there's, you know, an older man with a younger girl together, doesn't seem to be father and daughter. Even law enforcement needed education to understand what to look for and what to see. And I think a lot of times we don't see it because it's not something that most of us are used to in our daily lives. So that's why the education part is so important.
Philip, from a healthcare perspective, why is it such a difficult issue to get at?
My focus is children. And you think about the scenario of a young girl or a boy that's living in a home where abuse or neglect or some other unhappy situation, and they decide to run away. And they run away, and they meet this person initially who provides all the things that their family or their home didn't. And then all of a sudden it turns back around, and they're being broken down psychologically, physically, abused to the point where they don't know if they're going up or down. And so I think, you know, as we talk about who are the victims, we're talking about the disadvantaged, the vulnerable, the people who have not had a voice, because if they did have a voice, they may not stay in it or not been in it in the first place. And I think for children, too, we have to remember their maturity. They don't see the world the same way we do. And as I go to trainings, we talk about children who are sex trafficked, and oftentimes they will identify with their pimp as their boyfriend and have that degree of attachment that is very difficult to overcome. And oftentimes they've lived a life where they have been betrayed by people in trust. So why would they trust the doctor or the social worker that comes in, tell me everything and we'll make it all better for you, when they know that not always can that happen? Mm-hmm. So I think it's all of that.
Philip, what are the biggest needs in healthcare right now to getting at this issue of human trafficking or helping to do your part to reduce human trafficking?
I think certainly awareness. I think certainly awareness by our healthcare providers that what we may see in front of us may be the tip of the iceberg. And when we see it, does the healthcare provider have the tools to go that one step further? I think another thing, too, is as we deal with human trafficked victims, they're not going to be with us over time. We're going to see them in the ER, and we may never see them again. And we're not going to, in that short of a time, be able to develop a sense of trust or security. The best we can do is provide information and find ways to get them, empower them, maybe not then, but maybe later, to reach out to help with some of the national organizations that can follow them across state lines.
Sister Marlene.
Speaking about the medical system, not just at Mayo, but across universally in our country, a victim will tell you that, you know, it takes them a long time to say what they're experiencing. And when we go to the doctor, for example, most physicians say they have 15 or 20 minutes to see a patient. And the victim just doesn't have time to come forward and to say what really is their reality. They're in maybe to take care of some physical abrasion or something that has happened to them because they've gotten beat up mm-hmm. or mistreated in some way or other. But to tell the story behind that, even a small part of the story, there's not time for it. So there's something in our systems, too, that I think that need to be changed so that kind of attention to a patient a victim can be given, and also to develop the sense on the part of the providers of what is it that they're really seeing and hearing from this individual, mm-hmm. and how do we use the system as a whole to network to find the services that they really, really need.
You don't have the answer to that one yet, do you?
Well, what I hear from providers all over the country and from victims, they say that no one entity can solve all the problems.
Yeah.
It takes a whole community of services to do that. And so the more we can network in our efforts to raise awareness or to be able to refer or to find the service that a particular service that a victim needs is the most important thing. Law enforcement can't do it all. Healthcare can't do it all. Education can't do it all. Human services can't. So the more that we are networked and aware of the issue in our communities, I think it could be a real community builder in the sense of, you know, we're not out to be competitive in this sense of giving service to victims. We're here to work together.
You know, the trafficker is pretty smart. And he or she is going to keep a very close eye on that victim when they're anywhere out of their control. And I haven't seen it personally, but, you know, stories are told about needing to check in, text messaging multiple times, when are you done? So that close supervision, even if it's not in person, does occur, and it makes it very difficult, not only for the healthcare provider to ask and to deal with some of the issues, but for the victim herself or himself to feel that, yes, I have some opportunities where I can tell my story and maybe something will change.
We're talking about local efforts to reduce human trafficking. This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We're here with State Representative Jill Billings of La Crosse, the convener of the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery, Sister Marlene Weisenbeck, and Mayo Clinic Health System social worker, Philip Nielsen. This is not like a problem with our family structures necessarily, is it? I mean, if a young boy or girl is snatched off the street and sold into the sex industry, that may not say anything about how they were raised. You know, it's just happenstance that it happened to them.
Well, maybe it's happenstance and maybe it isn't. I think there's data to show that a lot of human trafficking takes place right within the familial institution itself, the family. And when we have fractured family situations, that puts everybody in a vulnerable position, including the parents and the children. Oftentimes the children will see behavior from their parents that is anything but healthy. And so then when that behavior is passed on to them, they think it's normal. So working with the institution of the family, I think, is extremely important. And our social expectations of what a healthy family is and can be.
Okay.
I think the fatherhood initiative, yeah, and the idea of how do young men who are fathers model appropriate behavior. I have a son, and we had talked as he was growing up about what is honorable behavior and what is my expectation of him as of my family member. And I'm not sure that all young men growing up in this family, for a variety of reasons, not always necessarily the father himself, but there's a number of social factors that go into why a father isn't involved in his children's life. But I do believe that fathers, if they are able to set that appropriate role model as compassion and respect for human life, we may have less demand for paid for sex and human trafficking.
Jill, did you want to respond to?
I know that many of these kids that are forced or coerced into human trafficking don't feel loved or valued at home. Now, you know, there are many faces of victims of human trafficking. So not all kids are the same. But often when someone is looking for a child to manipulate or try to bring into human trafficking, they look for someone who doesn't have self-esteem, who doesn't feel good about themselves, and seem to be vulnerable. Whether it's economically because they're living in poverty in a family, don't have a place to sleep at night, or just have not received that investment to help them feel like they're a strong, worthy person. So we know that. And I think it's also an important thing to have conversations with young men. At one of the facilities where there's a house for girls who have been human trafficked and they've had great success, there's also a facility for boys. And this is afforded them an opportunity to talk about with the boys about human trafficking and healthy sexual relationships and what it means to purchase sex from someone and everything that lies behind that. And it's been a very positive program, and some of the boys have actually come forward and talked about their experiences being trafficked too. This is a complicated and sad situation that we need to pay attention to.
Where is that facility you're referencing?
The facility is called Ladd Lake. It's one of the facilities that the state has. We're also starting a second one in a different part of the state for kids who have been human trafficked.
We don't have anything like that in the La Crosse area. Is that a goal? And what are some of the goals in the next 5 or 10 years to get at this and make it more than just awareness about the issue?
As far as I know, it is not a goal of the task force. However, until we see that, there is the kind of collaboration that is solid in order to make something like that happen, and we also need secure data that would say that there is a need for a facility like that in La Crosse, because we don't see a lot of victims identifying themselves. Our data is a little weak, I think, at this point.
So a structure for gathering better data is needed?
Yes, we have to continue to work on that.
Yeah.
I'd say we need data. We also need we need facilities. We need places where we have social workers, people who have training on helping these kids change their thinking. You know, if someone's been trafficked for years and manipulated, it takes a while for them to fully come to terms with their experiences, what happened and why it happened. And to bring some of those kids back to their families also takes time, too. I mean, at Ladd Lake, they'll bring a child back and spend a day with a family, and that's it in the beginning, and then bring them back to Ladd Lake where they're safe. And they work with the families to talk about what happened with that child and how they can help prevent something like that from happening again. There was one family where the person who was selling the child was pretending to be a friend of the family and wanted to still come around once the girl came back home. And they had to talk with the family on how, that person absolutely should not be allowed into the house or around the house, and you can call the police immediately and tell them that you don't want that person around your family.
Philip, do you have any ideas about the future or what is needed?
I have a dream. I think, one of the things that we have to be very cognizant of is what is the reality of that traffic victim? and what might be right for us might not be right for them. You know, the co-occurrence of drug dependency or drug abuse and being trafficked is just high. I don't have any statistics, but anecdotally that is a correlate. So it's a very difficult topic. It's one that we'd rather not deal with, and yet I think we have to start somewhere, and I'm pleased that we're at least dipping our toe in the stream, if you will. So there's a lot more to do.
Philip Nielsen, he's a social worker from Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. Also participating in our conversation today, Wisconsin State Representative Jill Billings of La Crosse and Sister Marlene Weisenbeck. She's the convener of the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery, talking today with Newsmakers senior producer John Davis about efforts to fight human trafficking in the region. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Members of our team include host and producer Hope Kerwin, senior news editor and producer John Davis, and thanks to Colin Malliate for helping produce today's show. If you missed part of today's discussion, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. And a reminder that our site also archives other past editions of Newsmakers. If you'd like to share your comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more online at wpr.org/newsmakers.